Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 29th of May 2020, and you're listening to me, Sir Longshanks, broadcasting live tonight at RadioAlbion.com, because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, the greatest story never told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic victory of World War II, and the soon-to-be-released Churchill's Body Count, Mr. Dennis Wise. Dennis, good evening, sir. How you doing?
Yeah, not doing too bad. Had a real good interview during the week, which has gone down really well on BitChute. With Monica Schaefer, we both did a stint on the I can't remember the channel now, but it's gone really well.
What were you talking about there then?
Everything really, just whatever came up. We just chatted about, obviously Monica was talking about her brother who's still in prison. But yeah, I really enjoy it.
And have you managed to get any more work done on Churchill's Body Count?
Not as yet, no, because of this stupid bleeding software thing that I've got. Still waiting for to get it sorted, to be honest. By the way, Citizen Reporter was the channel. Really, really good reports there. Good comments.
All right, so people should check that out if they want to hear your interview there. What was the problem with the software again that you were having?
When I tried to save it, see, they've updated everything, so it's like, you might as well just start again here, because it takes a while to get your head around everything, even though you've used the previous one. And when I kind of try and seal a video, you know, with sound and with pictures, just the usual way when I do it, it just crashes. You'll save MP3s, which is not really relevant when I'm doing videos.
Nightmare. It's like Skype, isn't it? When Windows took over Skype and Bill Gates took over Skype, it hasn't worked properly ever since. For years now, it's just been a nightmare. It's crashing, all problems with the sounds. You used to have a really simple file transfer on there. You could switch sounds off that you didn't want to hear. Very easy to change around between the speakers and the microphone that you wanted to use. And they just messed it all up, all the functionality. And they force you to accept updates now as well. They won't even let you stick with the old one.
I keep putting one off. Like, I've been getting these like, do you want to download now or do you want it tomorrow? About 2 weeks now, I've been giving it come back tomorrow.
Can you go back to your old video editing suite at all?
Yeah, but there's certain problems with that. I mean, that took a real hammering. I did nearly two documentaries. You know, which totals 6 hours each. Well, you can imagine the hours it took to do the 6 hours, if you know what I mean. So that's pretty battered. But I may have to revert to that for now.
There's a lot of work that goes into producing content. People that listen to it or watch it, maybe they don't appreciate it, but much longer than the actual length of the content goes into it. Like the notes for the podcast we're doing tonight, I spent most of the day last Friday getting all these notes together, about 4 or 5 hours. And I'm sure just to make a 15-minute video.
15 minutes, it's like, you know, maybe it could be 3 hours, 4 hours, but it can go into days depending on what, you know, crops up.
And I'm sure these musicians that write all this music on a computer, I'm sure they say, well, it can take days just to get 15 seconds of music right. So, it's the same.
It used to take me 3 weeks to do an episode of, like, Comments of the Back Door. When by then I got pretty adapted at it, you know. But even that, you know, every 3 weeks releasing a 15-minute video, it's a chore.
Well, if you want something to be good, you've got to put the effort in, haven't you? And you've got to do it yourself as well, I've learned.
Yeah, that's a lesson learned, isn't it?
Yeah, if you want a job done properly, do it yourself. Well, we are going to be looking again at the Spanish Inquisition tonight that we started last week. So we'll begin with a little bit of a recap. We learned last week why there were Jews and Muslims in Spain. Originally, the Jews had been there after they'd been expelled from Judea, basically, and they opened up the gates, brought the Muslims in because they preferred living with Muslims to living with the Spaniards. Lots of Jews flocked there from all over Europe. It was the golden age of Jewry. Then we had the Reconquista. and the Spanish took back their country, and the Spanish were very, very kind and charitable to the Jews and Muslims. They allowed them to actually stay in the country so long as they behaved themselves. And then the Jews started misbehaving themselves. The Muslims started misbehaving themselves as well. And last week we got to the point where the Spaniards are now making laws to protect themselves from the Jews, and they're making these laws saying that the Jews can't employ Christians, the Jews can't have civil positions, even regulating the clothing that they wear. The Jewish women were not to wear revealing clothes, and certainly no Christian women were to go into the Jewish settlements alone at night, and all that sort of thing, which basically implies that the Jews were doing things to harm the Christians, and in order to prevent that harm from happening, they had to make these laws. And one of these laws made it quite clear that the Jews had been lording it over the Christians as well, and no Christians were to give them titles or anything like that. A lot of them had made a lot of money, and obviously they were more wealthy than the Spaniards. And the Spaniards were thinking, well, hang on a minute, that's my king that's on that coin there, and you're charging me 25% in order to use my own money, my own currency. So you can understand that the Spaniards weren't very happy about this. And so life was being made not very easy for the Jews. We can put it that way. And as a result of that, some of these Jews were converting to Christianity because life was easier for them once they were Christians, but they were continuing to behave like Jews. This was always the issue. So long as they were Jews, they had to wear a star, they had to identify, or a badge at the time. I'm not sure if it was a star or not, but they had to wear a badge, they had to wear a special hat, they had to let people know that they were Jews. And if they had converted to Christianity, they were supposed to behave like Christians. And yet a lot of them were still behaving like Jews. And of course, once they were a Christian, they could pretend to be like the Spaniards. But really, they were still behaving like Jews. And this was the big issue. And eventually, Queen Isabella heard about it. As well as the problem with the conversos still behaving like Jews, the alleged discovery of Morisco plots to support a possible Ottoman invasion were crucial factors in their decision to create the Inquisition. The Moriscos were the Muslims who had become Christians. So we didn't just have conversos, didn't just have Jews that had become Christians, you had Muslims that had become Christians, and both of them were subverting the nation. And the Moriscos were trying to facilitate another Muslim invasion, which, of course, the Jews would have been more than happy about, as they were happy the first time. Do you want to add anything to that, Dennis?
Well, actually, I was listening to some similar, maybe it's a little bit further on, but it was Napoleon eventually who managed to free them all up, and Napoleon were a Freemason and slept in a night in a pyramid. But he was obviously rewarded with being put on an island in the middle of nowhere. But yeah, it's this thing about, are they really Christian when they change? Some happen. I mean, I believe that the greatest speech, one of the greatest speeches I've heard, was the Willard Hotel of Mr. Freeman, who did turn. He was at Versailles and knew all the inside information. But do they all? I don't know.
Yeah, a lot of the conversos that were actually involved on the side of the Inquisition were very good. I mean, we'll hear about Torquemada here later on. He was a converso Jew, and we mentioned last week Pfefferkorn that exposed the Talmud. We've also got Julius Ignatius, who started the Jesuits. So there have been some good ones, but the majority of them were just using it as a cover story so that they could continue with their Jewish practices. And we were talking there about Napoleon. What he did was he lifted all these restrictions, because these restrictions that they put on the Jews in Spain, they were similar restrictions that were put on them throughout Europe, because that was the only way that the church could deal with this problem. If they wanted to not kick the Jews out of the country, they had to put restrictions on them, because if they didn't have these restrictions, they would abuse the position that they were in. And then eventually there was the French Revolution, and that gave the Jews civil rights. And Napoleon was part of that as well. He gave the Jews civil rights, and it was from there that they called it the emancipation of the Jews, basically.
That's when the attacking of the Catholic Church. I mean, the Catholic Church was back and broke after the French Revolution. So yeah, that was the beginning of the end, really.
And the rights of man and human rights and basically the cult of worshipping man. It's all tied in together. So what we've got here, we've got Isabella, the queen. She hears that the Moriscos are plotting to open up the gates, the same as the Jews opened up the gates to the Muslims 600 years previously. So she's not very happy about this. And Fray Alonso de Ojeda, a Dominican friar from Seville, told Queen Isabella about the existence of crypto-Judaism amongst Andalusian conversos during her stay in Seville between 1477 and 1478. So she doesn't just hear about the Muslim plot, she also hears about the crypto-Jews. A report produced by Pedro González de Mendoza, the Archbishop of Seville, and by the Segovian Dominican Thomas de Torquemada, of a converso family himself, corroborated this assertion. So you've got converso here, a well-to-do converso, Thomas de Torquemada, and he's saying, yes, this is all true. They're calling themselves Christians, but they're still behaving like Jews, essentially, and they're mocking Christianity behind the Christians' backs. So because of this, the Spanish monarchs Ferdinand and Isabella requested a papal bull establishing an Inquisition in Spain in 1478. Pope Sixtus IV granted the bull, permitting the monarchs to select and appoint two or three priests over 40 years of age to act as inquisitors. And in 1483, Ferdinand and Isabella established a state council to administer the Inquisition, with the Dominican friar Thomas de Torquemada acting as its president. Torquemada eventually assumed the title of Inquisitor General. So what we've got here, we've actually got a converso that's heading this. So he's not, you can't accuse him of being anti-Semitic, because he's...
No, they could accuse him of being a self-hating Jew,
because he's ethnically Jewish, but religiously he is Christian. And this Inquisition, these Inquisitions had gone on for quite some time, really. And it was when you had a problem in the church of heresy, and you had people that were breaking the Christian rules, breaking the Christian laws, and they would have an investigation to see who it was that was doing this and to ascertain what should be done about it. And the difference here this time is that it was limited to Spain, and instead of the Pope running it, he'd set it up so that these two monarchs could actually run it, Ferdinand and Isabella, so that they could say who was going to be actually doing the job. And they actually got university lawyers to do this. It's not like they were religious fanatics. There was university lawyers that were actually acting as inquisitors, and it was all extremely fair and just. And
well, most of Europe were, if ever there were heretics, most of Europe were burning them, surely. I know England had a spell when witches were hunted down. So it wasn't just Spain.
Well, there was lots more, actually. There was none of this burning of the witches that went on in the Spanish Inquisition. And I don't think there was any Protestants that they went after. But it was the Protestants that were producing all these tracts saying that the Spanish Inquisition was the worst thing ever, and these horrific tortures and all these people that were being burned at the stake. And basically, I think what it was is that the Protestants were very close with the Jews, and I think the Jews were influencing these Protestants to put this information out, this propaganda out, that the Spanish Inquisition was really bad, to try and get the other countries in Europe to put pressure on Spain to stop the Spanish Inquisition. I think that was the reason.
And even black in the name of Christianity.
Yeah, and black in the name of Christianity. But, I mean, because who was it that stood to benefit from Protestants slandering the Spanish Inquisition? Well, it was the converso Jews that stood to profit from it. So, you know, maybe they were influencing them. And then finally, in 1483, the Jews are expelled from all of Andalusia for their misbehavior. And they're actually expelled from the whole of Spain as well, soon after. Several months after the fall of Granada, an edict of expulsion called the Alhambra Decree was issued against the Jews of Spain by Ferdinand and Isabella on the 31st of March 1492. It ordered all Jews of whatever age to leave the kingdom by the last day of July. They were permitted to take their property, provided it was not in gold, silver, or money. And remember, the money has got Ferdinand and Isabella's head on it. It's their money, basically. And if they're saying that they shouldn't be taking gold or silver, why would that be? Possibly because they hadn't actually created anything of value. All they'd been doing was working as moneylenders. They hadn't, and that what they could take with them is anything that they had created. So they could take anything that they had worked as craftsmen to create, or any livestock, or anything that's of value that you make with your hands. They were welcome to take that with them. But of course, that
sounds like German, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, of course, that's not what they do, is it? They always say we're not able to make things with our hands. We're only able to sell people money. That's,
yeah. I got charged £1.50 for using a credit card the other day.
Yeah, well, they were charging 25% on the money that they loaned out. And the money that they loaned out, as I say, it was the people's money. It was their king that was on the coins that they were loaning out. So you're essentially paying the Jews rent to use your own king's money. When you think of money,
it's an insult, isn't it, really?
Yeah, well, what is money? It's essentially a means of measuring the value of something. It's like a tape measure. You use a tape measure to measure the length of something. Well, you use money to measure the value of something. You have to have an agreed upon value for things, and you have to gauge it by numbers, and that's basically what money is, so that you can say 10 cattle is worth this amount. You can say 10 cattle is worth £10, and then you can say, and 20 sheep is worth £10. So therefore, 10 cattle is worth 20 sheep, and I can swap you your sheep for my cattle. And that was really the use of money. It wasn't that it was used in the way we use it today to buy things with. It was much more often, it was just used for gauging the value of something. And then you end up with these money lenders that say, well, if we're going to lend you out that tape measure, you've got to pay me 25% of whatever you've measured with it. It's
and if you're late, pay me back, you have another problem.
Yeah, and then you get your compound interest. And it doesn't, of course, because this is Wikipedia, it doesn't tell us the specific actions of the Jews for them to be expelled. And there always is actions. The king doesn't just get up in the morning one day and think, oh, I know, I'll kick the Jews out of the country. He would have been petitioned to do that by the people in Spain. And of course, this then caused even more of these Jews to convert to Christianity, because they didn't want to leave. They didn't want to leave Spain. The reason for this action, as described in the preamble to the edict, was the relapse of so many conversos, owing to the proximity of unconverted Jews who seduced them away from Christianity and kept alive in them the knowledge and practices of Judaism. So they're saying that because there were all these Jews around, it was too tempting for the conversos to continue money lending practices and all the various other things that Jews are doing. Yeah. The number of Jews exiled from Spain is subject to controversy, with highly exaggerated figures provided by early observers and historians offering figures which numbered in the hundreds of thousands. By the time of the expulsion, little more than 100,000 practicing Jews remained in Spain, the majority having already converted to Catholicism. Now, 100,000 is really not that many, and yet what the Spaniards have done today is they've said that any Jew that wants to get Spanish citizenship again is able to. And yet there really weren't that many that were kicked out, and the Jews are trying to get Portugal to do the same. And it was even less Jews that were expelled from Portugal. And of course, what happens then? You get Jews with dual citizenship. They're citizens of Israel, and they're citizens of Spain or citizens of Portugal. And of course, that means
that's never good, is it?
No, well, it means they have an influence in these countries that
you can't serve two
that they shouldn't have
two gods. Yeah.
So we got a real problem now with these conversos that are left and the other Jews. They've actually left the country, so the Inquisition begins. Torquemada quickly established procedures for the Inquisition. A new court would be announced with a 30-day grace period for confessions and the gathering of accusations by neighbours. Evidence that was used to identify a crypto-Jew included the absence of chimney smoke on Saturdays, a sign that the family might secretly be honouring the Sabbath, or the buying of many vegetables before Passover, or the purchase of meat from a converted butcher. The court could also employ physical torture to extract confessions, but only once the guilt of the accused had already been established. Crypto-Jews were allowed to confess and do penance, although those who relapsed were executed. So all that would happen is, if they were found to be guilty, is that they were told, well, you have to confess and you have to do penance. But if they continued, then they would be executed. And of course, they could always just say, actually, I'm still a Jew. And if they said that, that was it. They were free. They were free to go. Because this was purely about trying to weed out those who were saying they were Christian and weren't. So this wasn't a persecution of the Jews, although that's the way that it's been portrayed.
Yeah.
91.6% of those judged in Valencia between 1484 and 1530, and 99% of those judged in Barcelona between 1484 and 1505 were of Jewish origin, ethnicity. And don't forget, this is the Inquisition, so this is anybody that it looks like they're claiming to be a Christian, but they're not behaving like one. And the majority of the people that were not behaving like Christians were of Jewish origin. And it wasn't just that these people weren't buying vegetables before Passover. As we'll see later on, there were lots of other crimes that the Inquisition were actually investigating. In actual fact, let me just scroll down here and point some of them out. Blasphemy, sodomy, Freemasonry, bigamy, rape, pedophilia, bestiality, all those were the sort of crimes that the Inquisition was looking for. And it was those sort of crimes that would identify these people that were involved in them, that they weren't Christian, and they would be punished as well. And they didn't actually have civil authorities that were responsible for investigating those sort of crimes. It was only being carried out by the church. So they're sort of whitewashing this a bit, saying, oh, it's they weren't buying vegetables before Passover. There were much more serious crimes that some of these people were found guilty of. Do you want to add anything to that, Dennis?
Well, I came across something the other week about when the Holy Roman Empire came about. They actually changed. They didn't celebrate, the Christians didn't celebrate on the same days as what the Jews did. Like, they didn't celebrate on the days of the Passover, apparently. I suppose to separate themselves from the Jews, because although my beggars won't agree with me, that, you know, that Christianity and the Jews have been arch enemies for a long, long time. So, and that was interesting to know, because it's not something I was aware of.
Well, right from the beginning, they had different dates for the Passover. There was a big thing about it in Britain, because the British church originally had a different date for Passover, Pascha, or Easter. They had a different date to the Romans. But the actual Jewish religion, Talmudism, that didn't come about until about the 4th or the 5th century AD. They didn't actually write the Talmud down and come out with this religion, because, I mean, at the time of Jesus, you had the temple, you had the priests, you had sin offerings. None of that was left because the temple was destroyed, and the genuine Israelites, the genuine tribe of Judah, became Christians, and all the proselytes, all the scum, basically, the Bolshevik scum of the first century that moved to Jerusalem to have a revolution against the Romans, they ended up following the Talmud. They rejected Christianity and followed the Talmud and formed Judaism as a religion at about the 4th or the 5th century. I mean, you sort of laugh there. I'm saying, you know, all the scum that went there. But if you read Flavius Josephus and his histories of Judea, that's what he describes happening. And all these proselytes that the Judeans were making at the time, all these Pharisees were making proselytes of anybody that would come to them. And they would just get circumcised, and then they would be called a Jew. So there was no sort of ethnic basis to that. And they became mixed in with the Sephardic Jews, and then obviously later on, hundreds of years after that, they became mixed in with the Khazars and the Khazar Jews.
Interestingly enough, I was listening to David Icke in a recent interview, and he kind of went on to the Sabbatean subject, went into great depth really about it all, and ended up, he actually said to the interviewer, I'm going to get in hot water over this, and at the end of it all, he claimed that the Sabbateans were the same as the royal family in Saudi Arabia, and still in Israel, they're run by the same people, the Dom, I think he called them, both the same. And he kind of said, like, he felt that Israel was to blame for 9/11, which is a huge step for David Icke, I think.
Yeah, it is. The Jews have latched on to various different people who they thought were the Messiah ever since then.
Yeah.
Zavati Levi, Bar Kokhba, and various others that have all turned out to let them down. I think that's Zavati Levi. Didn't he become a Muslim eventually?
Yeah, well, that's the guy we're talking about, because apparently at the time, I think 1700s, and no internet, he had 1 million followers. So.
Yeah, very charismatic. Yeah. Well, I mean, you can see today they're all involved in television and Hollywood, and they can be charismatic.
He's explaining, because once he turned, he got the choice of either being executed or turning to Muslim or Islam, then that's how the rest of them infiltrated Islam, and why we have the Saudi royal family, the criminals, as he calls them, they are today.
Well, as we learnt here, or as we learnt last week, the Muslims and the Jews are very close together, and they're quite happy to live together. They are ethnically, they're brothers. Anyway, well, as I said, the Inquisition was only for Christians. It had no power to investigate, prosecute, or convict Jews, Muslims, or any open member of other religions.
We're never told that.
Yeah, anyone who was known to identify as either Jew or Muslim was outside of inquisitorial jurisdiction and could only be tried by the king. So they couldn't be tried by the church. And I mean, before this happened, the Jews were allowed to try other Jews. They were allowed to have their own court system and to live by their own laws in their own ghettos. And that was one of the laws that was overturned in the bill that one of the Spanish kings put out and said, well, no, we can't have this anymore. You can't live by your own laws. You have to live by our laws. And what they're saying here is only the king, only the secular courts could try the Jews. The religious courts, the ecclesiastical courts, which is what this was, they had no power over them. And that was all they had to do, was identify themselves as being a Jew, and that was it.
Which is probably why there's such a low number killed.
Sorry?
That's probably why there's such a low number killed. Because the numbers that the Spanish Inquisition is supposed to have killed, like, is a real exaggeration.
Yeah, it's hardly any. Yeah, so they probably just identified themselves and then said, okay, you caught us. We'll pack our bags and go.
See you later.
All the Inquisition could do in some of those cases was to deport the individual according to the king's law, but usually even that had to go through a civil tribunal. So even that would have been the same as today when we try to get rid of immigrant criminals, and they go to the appeals court and they hang around for years. So they were even playing that game back then.
Yeah.
The Inquisition only had the authority to try those who self-identified as Jews while practicing another religion, de facto. If they confessed or identified not as Judaizantes, but as fully practicing Jews, they fell back into the previously explained category and could not be targeted, although they would have pleaded guilty to previously lying about being Christian. The Inquisition also searched for false or relapsed converts among the Moriscos who had converted from Islam. So they called them Judaizantes, which I guess, yeah, it's not quite Judaizer, is it? Judaizer is someone that's trying to turn Christianity Jewish, but they were just paying Christianity lip service. Clearly, it wasn't just the remaining Jews encouraging the conversos to behave badly, though, because after the expulsion, there were no Jews left, but the Inquisition was still necessary. So remember that that was the excuse that we were given.
Yeah.
This is why we need the Inquisition, because they're copying the Jews that are here. Well, there's no Jews left there now, and yet they're still causing these problems.
Yeah.
So it goes deeper than that. The Spanish Inquisition had been established in part to prevent conversos from engaging in Jewish practices, which as Christians they were supposed to have given up. However, this remedy for securing the orthodoxy of conversos was eventually deemed inadequate, since the main justification the monarchy gave for formally expelling all Jews from Spain was the great harm suffered by Christians from the contact, intercourse, and communication which they have with the Jews, who always attempt in various ways to seduce faithful Christians from our holy Catholic faith, according to the 1492 edict. So what they must have been doing is subverting the church.
Mm.
So it wasn't the fact that there were Jews outside that were subverting the conversos. It's the fact that there were conversos within the church that were subverting the Spanish Christians.
Well, it's always going to happen, isn't it? When you get these two people together in the same place, all this has been going on for thousands of years. It's going to continue even now. So it's no surprise, really.
Well, that's why the National Socialists said, well, the Jewish Christians should have their own church. They shouldn't be a part of the German National Church.
Yeah, separate everybody, yeah.
Jewish Christians should be among other Jewish Christians. They shouldn't be among German Christians. And it's just common sense. As we've showed, the way the National Socialists dealt with the Jews was basically an extension of the way that the church has always ended up having to deal with them, and it always ends up the same way. Well, let's have a look at some of the things to do with the Inquisition. The rules of torture. Torture was employed in all civil and religious trials in Europe. The Spanish Inquisition was no exception. Its main differentiation characteristic was that, as opposed to both civil trials and other inquisitions, it had very strict regulations regarding when, what, to who, and how many times, for how long, and under what supervision it could be applied. The Spanish Inquisition engaged in it far less often and with far greater care than other courts. So they had a big list of rules and regulations for when they could actually use torture that weren't there in other courts. Confessions obtained through torture could not be used to convict or sentence anyone. So they had to have discovered someone was guilty first, and then they could torture them to find out more details. But the torture itself, they were prohibited to maim, mutilate, draw blood, or cause any sort of permanent damage to the prisoner.
Well, that's quite reasonable, because if you were arrested and then thrown straight into a torture chamber, you're going to say anything anyway to get out of there.
Yeah, and you could always recant as well.
Yeah.
If you'd said anything while you were tortured that wasn't true, you were given the chance afterwards, and they weren't going to torture you again, but you were given the chance to say, well, was that the truth? And if you said, no, it wasn't the truth, you weren't going to get tortured again. And that's in...
Which is fair enough, isn't it?
Yeah, in Blood Passover, the book that Ariel Twaff, the son of the chief rabbi of Rome, the book that he wrote about the Jewish ritual sacrifice of Christian children, he mentions that in there, that in these trials, they were always given the chance to recant afterwards, after they had pleaded guilty. But I think what they did a lot of waterboarding. That was one of the ways that they tortured, but they certainly didn't put people inside Iron Maidens with spikes going through them. Or
which is often portrayed like
pull fingernails out or chop fingers off or anything like that. They couldn't even draw blood. And if you think about it, at this time in France, you could be disemboweled for stealing a sheep.
Just for comparison.
Good.
Yeah.
And the church was very merciful here. And torment could only be applied for a maximum of 15 minutes. That's it. And actually, out of all the people that were tortured throughout the Inquisition, the most that anybody was tortured for was two sessions. So two sessions of 15 minutes.
Yeah, interesting.
The Roman Inquisition allowed for 30 minutes.
And the Soviet Inquisition,
yeah.
There's no time set.
Do you want to just talk a little bit about that while I have a glass of water here, Dennis?
Yeah, when they compare the Spanish Inquisition to the Bolsheviks, it really were, you know, there's no comparison whatsoever. You know, a Christian woman forced to have a baby cut out of her and then killed, just horrendous. But compared to what we're talking here, this is kind of humane torture, humane. Humane Inquisition, so to speak.
Yeah, the thing is that they will minimise what the Bolsheviks did, and you won't learn about it. And yet, children have all heard about the Spanish Inquisition, and it conjures up these images of people being put in coffins with spikes going through them, and horrific tortures. And it just wasn't true. Even the prisons were the best prisons in Spain, and there were actually prisoners in the secular courts who would blaspheme, so that they could be sent to the Inquisitor's prison, where the conditions were so much better. So it was better to be found a blasphemer by the church than
sounds better than Tower of London.
Yeah,
and I think Guy Fawkes got that treatment.
Yeah, well, that was barbaric. The Inquisitors themselves were university lawyers, not religious fanatics, and they were looking for evidence. They weren't looking to fill quotas for guilty verdicts. So there wasn't a political motive behind this. There was a genuine motive of not wanting the Christians to be subverted. This wasn't a political persecution.
I'm ashamed to say. Sorry, I keep interrupting.
That's all right. The trials themselves were extremely fair. Regarding the fairness of the trials, the structure of them was similar to modern trials and extremely advanced for the time. However, the Inquisition was dependent on the political power of the king. The lack of separation of powers allows assuming questionable fairness for certain scenarios. The fairness of the inquisitorial tribunals seemed to be among the best in early modern Europe when it came to the trial of laymen. And again, this is coming from Wikipedia. So,
wow.
For them to admit that is quite something.
Major.
When the Inquisition arrived in a city, the first step was the Edict of Grace. Following the Sunday Mass, the Inquisitor would proceed to read the Edict. It explained possible heresies and encouraged all the congregation to come to the tribunals of the Inquisition to relieve their consciences. They were called Edicts of Grace because all of the self-incriminated who presented themselves within a period of grace, usually ranging from 30 to 40 days, were offered the possibility of reconciliation with the church without any severe punishment. So again, that's very just, isn't it?
Pretty tame, yeah.
So if you admit to it, then admit to it now, and you can have this reconciliation, or admit that you're still a Jew now, and you won't have to go through this. And they actually, when they went to the villages, they didn't actually manage to find anyone. Because we're taught, well, all these neighbours were denouncing one another, and that didn't happen at all. It was only in the cities that they actually found people, And, you know, because it's telling us these were fair trials, that means that the people that they did find were genuine heretics.
Yeah, exactly.
Things the Inquisition looked for. The Inquisition was the prosecutor, in some cases the only prosecutor, of any crimes that could be perpetrated without the public taking notice, mainly domestic crimes, crimes against the weakest members of society, administrative crimes and forgeries, organised crime, and crimes against the crown. So if you think nobody else was actually doing this, this is something that the police do now for most of these, domestic crime, crime against weakest members of society. But back then, it was only the Spanish Inquisition that was doing it. You know, these, I think these were really good people, to be honest.
I can give you an example of I know we're slightly off the beaten track with Stalin, but after the war on Hitler was reputedly killed, he sent an investigation over, and they kind of got the dentist assistant who drew Hitler's teeth exactly, we're even looking at the chart. And so the person in charge went back to Soviet Union and said to Stalin, "No, we're pretty sure he's dead, like, because this dental assistant has drawn an exact match. There's really no problem." "Well, I'm not really convinced. I think you should bring her here." So they took her over there, and they charged her with having the chance to kill Hitler, not taking it, and not saving the world. She was put in solitary confinement for 6 years, and then when she was moved to a prison with her other people, she was so grateful to have somebody to talk to. So even, you know, there's just no comparison to what they were doing, to what we're doing here. Nothing.
We were so much more moral years ago. I mean, we may have had problems with parasites and not many medical advances, but as far as morality and just yeah. for being good people, we were far, far better back then, centuries ago, than we are today. Let's have a look at these things that the Inquisition looked for. Blasphemers, included under the rubric of heretical propositions, were verbal offences, from outright blasphemy to questionable statements regarding religious beliefs, from issues of sexual morality to misbehaviour of the clergy. Many were brought to trial for affirming that simple fornication, sex between unmarried persons, was not a sin, or for putting in doubt different aspects of Christian faith, such as transubstantiation or the virginity of Mary. And again, that's a Jewish thing about the virginity of Mary.
Yeah.
I think they're probably covering up that a lot of what's in the Talmud would break this law of blasphemy. I mean, part of what they've got to do... the Talmud...
I think they said... was Jesus' father a Roman soldier, something on them lines?
Yeah, and it says Mary was a hairdresser, which is like a code word for a prostitute. It insults the prophet Isaiah. Adam says Noah was a eunuch, a drunken eunuch, an alcoholic. and it's got prayers. I think they have to say a prayer every day where they curse Christians and they curse Christ and say that Christ is burning in hell. Boiling in hell in a vat of feces, yeah, I think it is.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, all that sort of thing obviously would break this law. So if they were found to have been reciting this, this, these bits from the Talmud, then that would break this law. Yeah, and also this fornication. They were trying to subvert the Gentiles, who worked out last week, from the dress that the women were told to wear, and the fact that women weren't allowed to go into these ghettos, because there's always
been this remember in Germany, they made the first adultery films,
and you got
which you really don't want to see.
And you got what they used to call white slavery, which was basically Jews enticing East European women, saying that they had jobs for them, and then getting them to go to South America and places like that, and they would pimp them out, basically, use them as prostitutes. And the same thing goes on in Israel today. There are a lot of Ukrainian girls there. So that sort of thing was going on. So that would have, they would have been searching for that as well.
Yeah.
Sodomy. The first sodomite was burned by the Inquisition in Valencia in 1572, and those accused included 19% clergy. So it's not like they were just going after these conversos, they're going after the authorities as well. I'd like to see that today. If they, you know, if they were to say 20% yeah. of the people we got for child abuse were in the authorities, they were the politicians. I mean, clergy were important people at the time. 19% clergy, 6% nobles, 37% workers, 19% servants, and 18% soldiers and sailors. And sodomy included pedophilia as a subtype. Often part of the data given for prosecution of male homosexuality corresponds to convictions for pedophilia and not adult homosexuality. So this proves the link between homosexuality and pedophilia. Nearly all of almost 500 cases of sodomy between persons concerned the relationship between an older man and an adolescent. Nearly all the cases, basically, often by coercion. With only a few cases where the couple were consenting homosexual adults. About 100 of the total involved allegations of child abuse. Adolescents were generally punished more leniently than adults, but only when they were very young, under 12 years, or when the case clearly concerned rape, and did they have a chance to avoid punishment altogether. As a rule, the Inquisition condemned to death only those sodomites over the age of 25 years. As about half of those tried were under this age, it explains the relatively small percentage of death sentences. And what do they say? 100 of the 500 cases of sodomy were child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
20%. And yet they'll try and say there's no link.
I think more than death sentences.
Yeah, they'll try and say there's no link between homosexuality and pedophilia, but there clearly was.
Black magic,
in the 1600s. Freemasonry. The Roman Catholic Church has regarded Freemasonry as heretical since about 1738. The suspicion of Freemasonry was potentially a capital offence. You could be hanged for you were suspected of being a Freemason. Spanish Inquisition records reveal 2 prosecutions in Spain and only a few more throughout the Spanish Empire. In 1815, Francisco Javier de Mier y Campillo, the Inquisitor General of the Spanish Inquisition and the Bishop of Almeria, suppressed Freemasonry and denounced the lodges as societies which lead to atheism, to sedition, and to all errors and crimes. He then instituted a purge during which Spaniards could be arrested on the charge of being suspected of Freemasonry.
Yeah, and one of them papal bulls, I think there were 2 over the centuries, were for all time.
Well, that's more serious than being caught being a converso Jew, really, isn't it? A converso Jew is just, you know, you just had to do a bit of penance. You're caught being a Freemasonry. That was considered to be more serious. That was capital offense. That was subverting your own people. I should imagine. I mean, the Jews were subverting another people, weren't they? That they were guilty of. But if people were guilty of Freemasonry, they were subverting their own nation. Treason.
Traitors.
Censorship of occult books. The Spanish Inquisition never persecuted scientists, and relatively few scientific books were placed on the index. They did try to get, as I said before, they did try to get the Talmud put on this index, and it was other Jews, it was converso Jews that wanted the Talmud to be put on this index. But this other Jew, Reuchlin, argued that it should be left available because it would help the Christians to understand the Bible more. Incredible argument. Absolutely incredible argument, and the Pope fell for it, unfortunately.
Shekels, isn't it?
Up till that point, they had burned a few copies of it, but the Catholic Church didn't even know what was in the Talmud until the 12th century.
Yeah.
They thought that
there's been some idiots.
Well, they thought the Jews were following the Old Testament. They didn't really understand that they were really following this book called the Talmud. They're quite a shock when they found out. Bigamy. The Inquisition also pursued offences against morals and general social order, at times in open conflict with the jurisdictions of civil tribunals. In particular, there were trials for bigamy, a relatively frequent offence in a society that only permitted divorce under the most extreme circumstances. In the case of men, the penalty was 200 lashes and 5 to 10 years of service to the crown. Said service could be whatever the court deemed most beneficial for the nation, but it usually was either 5 years as an oarsman in a royal galley for those without any qualification, or 10 years working, maintained but without salary, in a public hospital or charitable institution of the sort for those with some special skill, such as doctors, surgeons, or lawyers. The penalty was 5 to 7 years as an oarsman in the case of Portugal. So he took that very seriously, having more than one wife.
I'm just wondering what the penalty would be if a man married a man.
They didn't have that, did they? That was they just had that was just sodomy, and they said that there was hardly any cases of adult men with other men pretending it was some kind of a relationship thing. The whole idea of it was about dominance. They were saying very, very few were consensual in these cases.
Well, it's just that the marriage, abuse, if you're Catholic anyway, is a sacrament. Just like, you know, baptism. And when they brought that rule out, that kind of, you know, destroyed a sacrament.
Well, totally. It's like a black mass, isn't it? Like the reversal of the mass, and a gay marriage is a reversal of the marriage. It's not going to create new life, which is what the point of a marriage is to create new life. Right. And the gay marriage reverses that, and it's got no possibility of creating life. Non-religious crimes. Examples include crimes associated with sexual or family relations, such as rape and sexual violence. The Inquisition was the first and only body who punished it across the nation. So the only organization to punish rape was the Inquisition. Bestiality, pedophilia, often overlapping with sodomy, incest, child abuse, or neglect, and bigamy. Yeah, I've just got a loud noise outside, Dennis, if you want to talk for a bit.
Yeah, I was just looking at that bit. It's like, you know, the Bolsheviks actually told the soldiers to actually rape the German women, which is a far cry from what we've got here, because when they're saying, like, you know, that these are the people who actually went after the rapists, then it is an indictment of the Bolsheviks. Really bad.
Well, I was listening earlier about how the German soldiers, there were German soldiers that were executed because they got caught raping. I think it was French in one instance. It may have been Russians in another. And they were executed for that. And you can contrast that with the Russians that were told to rape, or the Red Army was told to rape by their leaders. But the tradition of actually punishing people for rape goes back to the Inquisition, according to this,
in Spain
at least. Non-religious crimes also included procurement, not prostitution, human trafficking, smuggling, forgery or falsification of currency, documents or signatures. I mean, those are all associated with Jews, falsification of currency, documents or signatures, tax fraud. Many religious crimes were considered subdivisions of this one. Illegal weapons, swindles, disrespect to the crown or its institutions, the Inquisition included, but also the church, the guard, and the kings themselves, espionage for a foreign power, conspiracy, and treason. So it wasn't just because of not having smoke coming out of the chimney on a Saturday. And you got quite a list of serious crimes there that they were looking for. Well, eventually the conversos either left Spain or behaved themselves. So it succeeded. The most intense period of persecution of conversos lasted until 1530. From 1531 to 1560, however, the percentage of conversos among the Inquisition trials dropped to just 3% of the total. So they'd either all left or they were all behaving themselves. In 1609, King Philip III, upon the advice of his financial advisor, the Duke of Lerma and Archbishop of Valencia, Juan de Ribera, decreed the expulsion of the Moriscos. Hundreds of thousands of Moriscos were expelled. The edict required the Moriscos to depart under the pain of death and confiscation without trial or sentence, to take with them no money, bullion, jewels, or bills of exchange, just what they could carry. So stricter with the Muslims by the time they eventually had to kick the Muslims out. This is what happens with a multicultural society. Eventually, they can't hold together. Eventually, you have to do something about it. Eventually, you have to deport these people.
Unfortunately, these governments were on the side of their own people. We've got that problem today.
Yeah. It is unknown exactly how much wealth was confiscated from converted Jews and others tried by the Inquisition. Because, of course, today they will try and say, the Inquisition was just because they wanted to rob the Jews of their wealth. Which is it's quite funny when you think about it, that because, you know, you got Occupy Wall Street, and they talk about the 1% and the rich have got all this money. And yet here they will try and say, well, we should be concerned for these poor Jews. And the Inquisition was just trying to take the money from them. They say that quite a lot about the kings as well, that these kings were only expelling the Jews because they wanted to take their money.
Yeah, I've heard that before, yeah.
There are numerous records of the opinion of ordinary Spaniards at the time that the Inquisition was devised simply to rob people. They were burned only for the money they had, a resident of Cuenca averred. They burn only the well-off, said another. In 1504, an accused stated, only the rich were burnt. And of course, they don't give us any other quotes. And as I say, this is Wikipedia, so they're trying to get us to feel sorry for the rich, basically.
Well, it's funny because I watched a documentary this week and they never give, I mean, I'm always going to get asked for sources or, you know, they won't take a claim out of source. But yeah, these documentaries made by what I call the Allies, they never have any sources. They'll just say what they say without any proof and just carry on. People believe it.
Well, you can check the sources at the end of the Wikipedia article, and I did look at them and they were all Jewish sources. Especially the bits about the Jews in Spain.
That's
why they don't give you any reasons for why the Jews were ever expelled from anywhere, because according to the Jewish sources, they didn't do anything wrong. I mean, and they didn't, according to them. They're just being Jews. They don't understand why people don't like it.
Well, Stalin, the warlord, and he said the Patton who said that. You know, the National Socialists are the ones that follow the papacy. And then the another woman said that they called Hitler, they actually called Hitler a military genius after he conquered France. But according to this documentary, they called him the greatest warlord. Well, where's your source? There was none.
Well, there aren't many warlords that sue over 20 times for peace, are they, that try to make peace?
And exactly. Well, that never got mentioned, did it?
Well,
frustrating.
Well, the end of the Inquisition eventually came. On the 15th of July, 1834, the Spanish Inquisition was finally abolished by a royal decree signed by Regent Maria Cristina of the Two Sicilies, Ferdinand VII's liberal widow, during the minority rule of Isabella II, and with the approval of the president of the cabinet, Francisco Martinez de la Rosa. But during the Spanish Civil War, Franco said he wanted to bring it back, but nothing was done about it. And the Alhambra decree that had expelled the Jews was formally rescinded on the 16th of December, 1968. And as I say, they are now allowing the Jews to become, or Jews that actually live in Israel, they're saying that they can get citizenship for Spain if they want, as some form of apology.
Well, they moved the body not long back, didn't he? Franco's body from his tomb, which was another insult. But it is what it is these days, isn't it?
Well, it's a shame Franco didn't bring it back. But what is a real shame is that the Spaniards are apologising for their ancestors, and their ancestors did what they did because they felt they had to.
Yeah.
These people allowed the Muslims, they opened the gates to the Muslims, they locked Christians in the church, opened the city gates to the Muslims, and allowed the Muslims to invade and take over Spain, and were then rewarded for it.
Yes.
And the Spanish Christians didn't take revenge for that. They said, well, now we've taken our country back, you can stay here, but you have to behave yourselves. and they didn't behave themselves. They kept doing the money lending. They kept breaking the Christian laws. We'd just gone through the laws that they would break. So they were eventually told, well, either you're going to have to be a Christian or you're going to and behave as a Christian, or you're going to have to leave. And then eventually they got it down to just 3% of the people they were investigating were previously Jews. So either they kicked all the Jews out or they succeeded in getting the Jews to behave like Christians with the Spanish Inquisition.
Yeah, and
it was, and it was the first organization to investigate and prosecute rape. You know, I think they're a very good organization, and it's a great shame that Protestants have run them down so much. Interesting stuff. Yeah. Anyway, well, we've reached the end of the podcast, Dennis. Thank you for coming on today.
Okay.
Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We will be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.